You are listening to Grandpa Lampshade.
Whether you've been waiting in anxious anticipation or whether this is your first time stopping by, it's great to have you here. The Lampshade Show is back, the one and only internationally listened to Church of the Lampshade Show. And really am glad you're here. As always, we look forward to having a great, thoughtful discussion. We'll have our Christian-specific segment. If you're new around here, you don't know how the show's set up, we kind of have these steps we go by. We have our listener support section where we read some notes from the listeners, and we go into just a general discussion, and then we'll have a Christian-specific message at the end of the show, or about halfway through the show. It usually wraps the show up, put it that way. If you think about it, if you attended church when you were, during sane times way back in the day, you know, especially like in the country, people would show up early and they'd stand around outside and, you know, visit about what's going on in the community and in their lives or on their farms or whatever. And then they would eventually go inside and do the actual church stuff. And that's kind of how we're set up here. It's kind of reminiscent of saner times. Either way, we're glad you're here. And if you are a first time stopping by, I think you're in for a real treat. I'm real proud of what we do here, as the listeners are a part of the congregation. And I look forward to sitting down visiting with y'all just as much as I hope y'all look forward to sitting down visiting with me. This is installment number 71 of the Church of the Lampshade Show. And as I said, we always start off recognizing those who pay their tithes and financially support the show. Well, don't worry, this isn't tedious shekel shilling. This is actually just a fun part of the show. We do have 7 supporters this week, including 3 Bitcoin Anons. Very much appreciated. If you want to be a part of that, we do have snail mail, and we do have a Bitcoin address down there. If you've got another kind of cryptocurrency that you would rather use, drop me an email. That's down there, and I'll do my best to get you an address for that. Very accommodating here. So, all the listener support is very much appreciated. So, like I say, as we do, if you're new around here, we like to start off with the back and forth as we go to the listener supporter mailbag. David, who asks, what happened to Gab? Every improvement makes it worse. And this is true. I'm wondering if, like, Gab serves a purpose of, like, I don't know, gaslighting us or just like, I like to refer to it as Gabschwitz. It's like we're all put into this camp and we're just stuck there. There's nobody new to talk to. And when you watch and people wind up like trolling each other because there's no one else to troll. And, you know, I read these notes at random, and I should actually sit through and sort them out, because this actually would be a good one to segue into what we're going to kind of, I think, we'll discuss as we move forward in the show, which is the part of this narrative that we're seeing playing out is this effort to isolate you. And we're, you know, on social media, you know, make no mistake, we were people who were speaking the truth, people who were having fun, posting dank memes on Twitter and Facebook and whatnot back in the day. The reason you're not on there isn't any of the reasons that they say. It's because you were dangerous, because you were reaching people. Whether it seemed like it or not, you were actually reaching people. And you would have people. I remember back in the day, I would have people come back around and be like, man, I looked into that stuff. And, you know, you're right. You know, I mean, it was few and far between. Most people just get triggered and screech at you. And that was as fun in its own way. But we weren't causing any harm to anybody, now, were we? I don't remember how many. Of course, I haven't been on Twitter in years. If you see somebody on Twitter using my name, it isn't me. They're a LARPer. Just put that out there. But I remember that, you know, I out of all of the times on Twitter, I never saw anybody like, you know, post something and you would look at it. You know, let me rephrase that. I never saw, because I did see commies do it. I never saw anybody on our side post something and I read that and I winced and I was like, man, dude, you're like, threatening a terrorism on people. You know, you're threatening people's lives. You can't do that. You know, that's not productive. Don't be doing that. Don't be doing that, friend. You know, I never saw that ever. I saw commies do it, but I never saw anybody from our side do that. And yet, what we were all banished. Well, why? Well, they claimed because we were threatening a terrorism. We were. Just fill in the blank. You know all of the excuses because you've been banned too. But those were, of course, like everything else in the narrative, it is a lie. You are a threat. You are a threat because people were actually starting to listen to you. Even from time to time, I would have commies that were capable of rational discussion, and we would have a rational discussion about things. And amazingly enough, find some common ground. You know, I don't love big corporations. I think big corporation, big banks are the enemy of the people. You know, and some rank and file commies feel that way, too. They, you know, but they haven't ever had anyone point out to them, you know, what a lot of the views of the dissident right are. They have this Hollywood caricature of who you are, and that's what they go with. But when we were allowed to be on these platforms, we could actually, from time to time, have one that would stumble in that was capable of rational thought without just screeching and running and looking for a safe space. And they would be like, oh, wow. You know, so really, aside from this, you know, whole believing that races are different, you know, we got a lot of common ground. And even on that, if you could talk to them on that, you would make them understand that you don't hate people from other races, or at least I hope you don't. You know, you actually, diversity means the races are actually different. How do you say that diversity is this great thing, but then you turn around out the other side of your mouth and claim that all the people are just the same no matter what? That's just silly. Then there's no diversity. There's only differences in skin color. That is a contradiction on its face that these people push all the time. We just simply say the races are observably different and have different behavior patterns and different sets of values as an extension of their, you know, genetic basis. Oh my gosh, that sounds like science. And I thought we loved science. You know, so really, even when you get into that, there's not that much difference. You know, because we're not a cartel, or at least I hope you're not. You know, this Hollywood cartoon caricature of what the dissident right is. It is not about white supremacy and hating other races. It's not, it shouldn't be, at least, about that. It's just recognizing that these races are different. And that is why the natural order of things is for people to have their own societies and develop and live the way they want to do. Nobody wants to live under another race's rule. They would rather, even if things are worse. You know, even if things are worse in their society, they would rather be ruled by their own than by somebody else. It's impossible to force the value system of one race onto another race. It's a fool's errand, and it's not something that should be done. I always come back to when they talk about, you know, justice, this social inequality and this and that, and all of the things that they claim that we need to cure this. Because the fact that there are these different outcomes must mean there's racism. The thing that always gets me is the stuff they come up with. Well, what do we need? You know, well, we need more social programs, and we need more education. We need this. We need that. We need to do this, that. You know, the long laundry list. And I'm always, when you think about it, what are they promising for an outcome? They're promising basically an outcome of what? If you do all of these things, if you spend all of this money, if you do all this and enact this and that and the other, what are they saying in the end? They're saying that these other races, usually in America, that means blacks, will start acting like white people. The same people that talk about the diversity and how they're so not racist and this and that. At the end of the day, what they're telling people is if you do all of this thing, blacks will start acting like white people. But yet you are the white supremacist. It is they who are essentially saying, if you'll do all this stuff, we can make these blacks start acting like white people. The only reason they don't act like white people is because of racism. And yet, if you're a truth seeker on the dissident right, you say, well, no, it's because they have a whole different set of values. They have a different way of viewing the world because they have a different genetic makeup. They have different time preferences. They have all of these things that make them different from us, because I thought we were supposed to think diversity is a wonderful thing, which it is, by the way. It's part of the natural order. You should have a diverse ecosystem. It's just that history teaches us is when you try to force against the natural order and force different races of people to live together, it never works out. It always winds up in conflict because each one will try to impose their way on the other. And it just equals conflict. And it equals being worse for everybody involved. I'm going to stop that there because we need to keep going through the listener supporter mailbag. We'll kind of touch on that a little more because they are isolating us on that social media platform. It is a part of a larger program of isolation. Mr. T, one of our weekly supporters, always appreciated. GPL, I must admit a certain amount of satisfaction watching these quote unquote progressive cities in the U.S. get molested by the elite's own pets. Good times. Well, yeah, it is. It's like this whole thing in Atlanta, you know, because like with the George Floyd thing, yes, we know he was taking a deadly cocktail of drugs and died of, you know, the result of that. It wasn't from what the cop did, but you can't change the optics of it. And everybody, myself included, when you saw that, and the cop, you know, they've got him arrested, they've got him down on the ground, the cop's sitting there with his knee on the guy's back. I mean, you can't look at that and not be like, that cop's a dick. You know, I mean, really, I mean, nobody felt like, no, I wouldn't, I wasn't, and I won't. I would sit there and defend that guy for that. I mean, yeah, I think murder now, I mean, once the autopsy result came out, it's like, yeah, the guy was, you know, going to drop dead regardless because of the drugs he had taken. But you know, there's no way with the optics of it that you could look at that and be like, well, that cop was a great guy. Unfortunately, yeah, I mean, he was being a dick. You know, I mean, that shouldn't be a murder rap, but he was being a dick. But now you have this Atlanta thing. And I mean, remember when the answer to all of this was going to be body cams? Because then the police couldn't get away with their tricky, you know, things. I'm not saying that the police never do corrupt things. Y'all listen, those of you that listen to the show for a long time know I'm not a badge licker. I don't run around, you know, my heroes and all of this. But I remember when the answer was going to be the body cams, because that would keep the police in check, because we would have the body cam images and the truth would come out. We could get to the truth. And hey, I was all for it. Anything, you know, you should never be against something that gets you closer to the truth, right? So we have this Atlanta happening, and I mean, they released the body cam video, and you have the guy, and da-da-da-da-da, and yeah, granted, you know, anybody can second guess anybody. If I was a cop, yeah, I probably would have let the guy just park his car there and walk to his sister's house, just because I wouldn't have wanted to do the paperwork. That's why I'm not a cop. Yeah, you know, because I mean, back in the day, that's the way it was. You know, back in the day, they might stop you at 1 a.m. and you'd had too much to drink, but there wasn't another car on the road, and they would give you the, well, how far is your house? Well, it's about 2 miles down the road. Well, you know, they might even follow you, you know, get on home. But if I see you out, you're going to jail. Yeah, you know, they might cut you a break like that and you don't get that anymore. You know, I was in the cop's shoes. Yes, I probably would have just let him park his car there. And hell, I might have even given him a ride to his sister's house. But regardless, you know, I mean, I'm not saying the cop was in the wrong to enforce the law. I'm just saying that's the option. But anyway, getting to the point, because as I am wont to do, I tend to go off on a tangent. So we have the body cam video, and they're arresting the guy, and he fights two cops. He's fighting two cops off, grabs a taser. We don't know if the cop even knew he grabbed the taser. Cop starts chasing him. He whips around, and the taser is shaped like a gun. Fires the taser off. Cop shoots the guy, kills him dead. We all know the happening. Now, this isn't the George Floyd optics here. Yeah, you know, and to sit here, now they're bringing this guy up on murder charges because, well, the taser was it was this many feet outside of its range, and so he couldn't have felt that his, you know, if you've been in any kind of fight, conflict, combat situation, you know that's bullshit. You're running on adrenaline. You can sit there and some asshole can sit there in a cushy office. And once again, I'm not one to run around. I'm not a badge licker. I don't run around defending the police. But, again, truth is truth. Reality is reality. And if anybody's been in any kind of combat situation, whether that's a barroom fight, whether that's actual, like, in the military, you know, you're sitting there nodding your heads because you know that's bullshit. You're running on adrenaline. You're in a fight. This guy grabbed whatever, you may or may not have known he grabbed it. You're chasing. All you know is he's whipped around and pointed this thing at you, and you see him pull the trigger. You were sitting there going, well, let me see. By my calculations, I am 2.5 feet out of range of that taser. You're going to hit me from there. That is bullshit. That is not reality. That is not the way the world works. You know, that, I mean, it's not. It's not the way the world works. But yet, now they're bringing murder charges on this guy. And, you know, nobody looks at that. Well, I mean, I guess some people do because they have an agenda. But nobody looks at the optics of this Atlanta incident and goes, you know, wow, that cop was being a real dick. No, you're sitting there looking at that and you're like, yeah, okay. I mean, I just... But yet they're playing it up as the same thing. They're playing up the same thing. Oh, this guy was like hunted down and murdered by the police when that's observably not what we're seeing. So, yeah, now they've got a bunch of the police, and no doubt many of them are black in Atlanta that are all calling in sick. And I don't blame them. You're going to bring a guy up on murder charges for that? Now, I'm sorry, if you fight with the police and you grab a taser and you run and you sit there and turn around, swing around and point a gun-shaped object, you're going to get a bullet in your ass. I mean, that's how a combat situation is going to work. You know, I mean, that's the way it is. But yet, yeah, they're going to put murder charges because that's what the mob demands. I thought in this wonderful system we had, we didn't have mob justice, which in other words... What, lynchings? That's a form of mob justice. I thought we didn't have mob justice. I thought that was a bad thing. But they're only doing that. We know they're only doing this because the mob demands it. They're going to give the mob whatever they want. So, yeah, anyway, the cities are very spicy place to be. I wouldn't want to be in the cities, but, you know, it's... It is what it is. From Debbie, thank you for the show. Really enjoyed a lot. I look forward to it every week. Hope this finds you and your family well. My prayers with you. Very much appreciate it. And yes, I did read the rest of it. It's very good. I'm not sharing on the show because there's no way I could convey what you put here without sharing all of the details. And I'm afraid all of the details, it just reveals too much about you personally. I do care about y'all and do whatever, you know, to maintain your privacy, shall we say. And, you know, anyway, but yes, I did enjoy it. And you're very much right. I mean, this whole white privilege thing is absolutely nonsense. If you've got, if you know anybody in your family that's now, you know, they're out of high school and they apply for college, look at the number of scholarships that specifically do not apply to you if you are white. All that white privilege. You know, you were talking about family history and what your family, you know, and it's like this whole notion that people have, like blacks are the only ones that ever pick cotton. You know, several generations back, all of my family picked cotton. And yes, that meant you walked through the field, you know, by hand. You can't imagine what a miserable work that was for anybody doing it. But there are a ton of white people that pick cotton. This notion that only blacks have done horrible, tedious, awful manual labor is just, you know, it's just simply not true. But yet we're fed, once again, this false narrative of all of this privilege you have, all of this wonderful white privilege you have. You only have what you have because, you know, of the benefits of the racism. Because as we've spoke about before, this is like a religious doctrine for these people. This all the races are exactly the same is a religious doctrine. And they have to settle that contradiction when they observe different outcomes, because all the races are not the same, that they have to justify, they have to make up a fantasy of, well, the reason they're not getting the results they're getting that they expect, that their dogma calls for, is because somebody's tinkering with it, because there is a systematic racism involved. That's got to be the answer. And I'll take that opportunity to go off on another tangent, you know, because somebody on Gab Schwitz the other day, you know, we were talking about these things, and somebody piped up and said, yeah, but I feel like I'm supporting these things every time, you know, I pay my taxes. I'm supporting these things, and I made the point then, and I think it's a point worth repeating here on this show because it's a far wider audience than being on Gab Schwitz. But this is the difference of the mindset. This is the importance of the mindset of the difference between consenting to be governed and simply being ruled over. So I removed my consent to be governed by these people long ago. That doesn't mean I go around breaking the law. Doesn't mean I'm planning and plotting to overthrow the government. It means that I recognize in my mind that, you know, I'm not consenting to any of this. I'm ruled over. Yeah, you know, I told that person, no, you're not, because the reason you're not paying your taxes voluntarily because you're like, oh, I love everything they're doing, so I'm paying these taxes to support what they're doing. You're paying your taxes for the one simple fact that if you do not, there's the threat that they will send men with guns to take your shit and probably put you in prison. And if they feel like it, they will kill you. If you, heaven knows, if you resist, they will shoot you, they will kill you, and that'll be it. There won't be any mobs for you. There won't be any cries for justice for you. You will just be a footnote in the back of the local newspaper. You're not consenting to anything here. You're ruled over by force. Make no mistake, it's all it is. You're being ruled over by force. You pay your taxes, not because you support the agenda. You don't pay your taxes. They don't ask you. They don't say, hey, would you like to pay the, would you like for your taxes to go for yet another war in the Middle East, bombing people or minding their own business in a village? Yes, I'm all for that. No, you don't get a say in any of that. Why? Because you're ruled over. You pay your taxes because if you don't, they may come take your shit and throw your ass in prison. Worst case scenario, pull a bullet in the back of your head. You're ruled over by force. They paint this freedom illusion for you and paint this boogeyman of these other countries out there, be it China, which is boogeyman of the week this week, or Russia, which will probably be boogeyman of the week next week, or North Korea, which is like the boogeyman all the time. It just sometimes it's a number one, sometimes number two, number times it's number three, but it's always in the top three boogeyman out there for Americans to be frightened of. North Korea. Why, in North Korea, they don't have the freedoms. If they get out of line, somebody will come take their shit and put a bullet in the back of their head. Oh, really? God bless America. Don't pay your taxes and see what happens. You'll find out how much freedom you have. Now, this is the difference between the mindset. And it sounds like just, what do I want to say, just kind of just a word play, but it is an important point of view of recognition of the truth. If you're not agreeing to these things, then you're not consenting to be governed. You are simply ruled over. Yes, you still have to follow the rules, but it's under the threat of force. Again, nobody's saying, you're going out. In fact, if anything, you're probably more law-abiding because you don't have the illusion that you got all this freedom. You're being more law-abiding because you don't want to step out of line because you understand the nail that sticks up is going to get hammered down. But you realize it in mind, and it is a good place for you to be because there's so much of this system that steers you to being self-hating. You know, when you complain about it and you have the normie con out there that says, well, it's our fault because we keep voting these people in, as if the voting thing is ever changed the direction, when it has not. It's your fault. It's your fault. We're not voting. It's our fault. It's the people because we're not voting the right people in. Oh, Supreme Court just said doesn't matter what you vote for. Well, we need to vote for the right people so we get the right Supreme Court justices. Only every time you think you're getting the right Supreme Court justices and the media says, oh my gosh, they've elected what amounts to a right-wing neo-Nazi white supremacist to the Supreme Court. And then the first order of business comes around and they side with the commies. Well, we need to vote for somebody else that'll bring us even better Supreme Court justices. The entire system is rigged, folks. It's not your fault. Doesn't matter how much you vote. But just recognize that this isn't a consent thing. You're consenting to be governing like these people, like just like on the same level as some woman that gets her face bashed in, her clothes ripped off and raped is consenting to surprise sex. There's no consent involved here. You either do what you're told or under the threat of violence. If you don't do what you're told, they will enact violence on you. That's the reality of it. And we just recognizing that is good for your own mental health because you don't need to be blamed. You don't need to be blaming yourself. And finally, from Jackie, Grandpa Lampshade, hope all is well. And I really enjoyed the Christian segment about the wheat and the tares, my favorite parable. It prompted me to look up photos and comparison between the two. And I was surprised to see that while wheat, when ripe, hangs its head as if in reverence and submission, the tares stand upright in defiance. What a great analogy, and goes to show that there's always more to learn, no matter how much one studies his words. Best regards, Jackie. And it is. I mean, it is a good. It is. It is also one of mine. That one and the servants that each get given a different amount of money to invest. I like that one as well. But no, the wheat and the tares, or the wheat and the weeds, however you want to put it. It is a very informative parable. You know, unfortunately, people are so removed from agriculture, you know, because everybody's been forced into the cities. People are so removed from that a lot of these things have lost their meaning. Of course, at that time, you know, it was an agrarian society. So everybody, well, you could tell these and people knew exactly what you're talking about. And unfortunately, with everybody in the cities now, it's so removed from nature. A lot of people don't understand these things and how relevant it is. Also, a thing I think worth pointing out is, you know, the wheat produces what? Grain. I mean, you plant one grain of wheat and you wind up with a stalk of wheat that produces many grains of wheat. And that's just how it is for us. As believers, we're the tares, the weeds. They produce nothing. They just take. They just take from the soil. They just take from the soil. They take the nutrients. They take the life away from the wheat and just soak it up. And produce absolutely nothing. They're absolutely worthless. They don't. There's no good thing they bring. They're just there, sucking the nutrients out of the soil, choking out the wheat, which is actually producing something. Produces more wheat, which of course, you know, has all kinds of uses. So anyway, we're gonna wrap up listener supporter mailbag. I'm looking at the clock here, and we've already done like almost half the show just on that. And that's why I say, I mean, this is good stuff. It's always a back and forth here. The congregation, it's Church of the Lampshade. And again, if you want to be a part, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. That information's at the bottom of the page. Last little bit of shameless shekel shilling, if you would. We make shekel shilling fun here at the Church of the Lampshade, no doubt. But now, talking about the congregation, this kind of references back to the earlier letter here. I was thinking about this constant work of isolation. They want to isolate you. And not just from the general population, as we were talking about the social media thing earlier, you know, so that you can't reach other people with the truth. They want to keep you separate from them. But they want to isolate the population themselves. Of course, it's most obvious with the corona lockdowns, the COVID isolation, whatever you want to call it. You know, they're literally isolating people in their houses, telling you to sit in your house and be afraid. Wear a mask. Cover up who you are. You don't want people to see who you are. Cover your mouth. Shut that mouth. Over in Dallas, isn't it amazing? I'm going to get off on a tangent. I don't have time for tangents, but I'm going to get off on a little one anyway. Isn't it amazing all these people that pop up and suddenly they're the authority? And you're like, I don't know if you're a thinking person, you're like, why the hell is this guy the authority? Over in Dallas, there's a judge over there, Clay Jenkins. And all of a sudden, he's the authority. He's this judge stands up and says, well, we're going to require everybody that goes inside of a business in Dallas to wear a mask. A judge. A judge? Since when are the people ruled over by a judge? But apparently so. These are the new days. You have to wear a mask if you go into business. This is the clown world we live in. This isolation thing is in the literal sense with this whole corona hoax. And I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm saying the numbers they're using are blown way the hell out of proportion. People are realizing that to a certain extent. They're using it to literally isolate people in their houses. Can imagine people that are actually doing everything. Can you imagine if you were living your life literally like the quote unquote experts were telling you had to live? You know, back when they were like, everybody, you've got to stay home. And people, I can't imagine like not talking to anybody, staying in your house, peeking out, not talking. I can't imagine. They're literally in solitary confinement in your own house. You're literally putting yourself under house arrest. You are isolated voluntarily just because I don't realistically, I mean, yeah, there were some incidents and that served a purpose as well, to make an example. But really, do you think that if you went outside your house and went to town, like the cops were going to pull you over, jack you up and throw you in jail for going outside? I guess there were people that were actually doing that. I can imagine what that did for their mental health. Everybody always asked me as we've gone through this thing, you know, well, how are you dealing with the social distance? I'm like, social what? I don't know anybody that does that shit. Everybody's just going about their normal lives as best as they can. Now, there's other things because other people are doing this stuff that, for the rest of us, we got work to do. We'll have time for all that. You go by the construction site, do you see any of those construction workers out there social distancing? No, they're out there. They got work to do. They got time to play along with this hoax. But the point here is, it's a part of literal isolation. And we're seeing this work in many ways. I mean, with the corona thing, you've got a literal program of physically, literally isolating you in your home. But it goes on beyond that, because with the commie protests that we've been seeing, the BLM protests, this too is a part of isolation, and you may not realize it. When they tear down these statues, oh, they claim it's because it's a statue of a racist. They claim it's because it's a statue of a white supremacist because some guy fought one side of the Civil War and unfortunately lost. And these people, of course, have no sense of history. They think the Civil War was about slavery. It's a topic for another day. We touched on it, by the way, on Friday's installment of the Daily Nationalist with Sven Longshanks. So if you want a little more on that, you can tune into that. We touched on that there. What they're doing with this statue pulling is they're isolating you from your history. As I said on that show, just take all of the buzzwords they're using, dead racists, slave trader, all this stuff, and just insert the word white people, because that's what they really mean. Because it's about isolating you from any sense of your history. Because if you don't have a sense of your history or a sense of, you know, those that came before you, then you're what? You're isolated. You're a person living in the now. You have no sense of self because you don't have no sense of where you came from. You have no sense of your history. You have no sense of your people. You have no sense of your nation. You don't have a nation. You were an island. You're isolated. You see, this too is a form of isolating you. They're isolating you from your history. They're tearing your history down. They're saying your history is horrible. It doesn't exist. And if it doesn't exist, it means you supported racist, slave trading white supremacists who fought for the Confederacy. Not sure how they reconcile this with the black regiments that voluntarily fought for the Confederacy. Yes, I do. They reconcile it by doing what they always do. They simply ignore it and pretend it didn't exist. They're isolating you from your history with tearing this down. They're isolating you literally with this corona thing. They're isolating you on social media, where the only platform you can be on is Gabschwitz, where you're just in there with other like-minded people. Now, that may sound great in the sense that, well, at least you have other people to talk to, but it gets tedious. It gets tedious when you make a point and somebody has to chime in and say, it's the Jews. Oh, we've never heard that before. Thank you. Thank you very much. I just totally didn't know that. Appreciate it. It winds up just being the same shit over and over. It's like social media concentration camp. You're isolated from anybody else as fresh ideas, anybody who can challenge your worldview and, you know, keep you on your toes, keep you sharp. You can maybe introduce them to some new information, and maybe they can bring a point of view that you hadn't considered before. Can't have that. Got to be isolated. It's one of the things I think is important about the show. I really love what we have here. I mean that. And again, if you're new tuning in, you notice I use the term we all the time. Not I, not me. We. Because I do consider the listeners every bit of part of the show as the host. I mean, yes, I'm the one sitting here rambling off on a tangent. And the listeners are the ones sitting there going, what the hell is he on about? What the hell is he on about now? What does this have to do with what he started talking about? And half the time, I forget what it had to do with what we're talking about. But I call it the congregation because you need to understand you're not alone. You're not crazy. Okay, some of y'all may be crazy. If you are crazy, then you can get that in check. But you're not alone. You are not going crazy. The world is going crazy around you. You understand? If you're isolated, you think there's something wrong with me. There's something wrong with me. The whole world has gone off the rails, but everybody's acting like it's normal. So the problem must be with me. As a white male, if you're a white male, your brain, whether you recognize it or not, your brain is wired towards problem solving to the extent of your own detriment, because some problems can't be solved because they don't make any sense. If somebody brought you something and said it doesn't work, you know, you're not going to sit there and go, huh, throw it in the trash. More than likely, you're going to sit there and start trying to figure out why it doesn't work. You just can't help it. At least that's the way I am. You'll sit there and try to figure out why it doesn't work. Try to fix it. Women get mad at you for that, by the way, because they'll sit there and ramble on about problems at their job, you know, and you listen to it. And at the end, you go, well, what you need to do is tell them this, that, or the other, or you need to put that person over here so that they're not going to. And then they get mad at you because they didn't want you to fix it. They just wanted you to, listen to them bitch endlessly, endlessly about it, because they're wired different. And men sitting there scratching their heads going, these bitches are crazy. But we can't help it. We can't help it because we're wired to be problem solvers. But some problems can't be solved because they're made up. They're a contradiction, not grounded in truth. If you took somebody at their word that brought you something and said, I don't know, it just broke on its own, it doesn't work, and you start looking at it, you start wind up looking at it and trying to figure out why it doesn't work, and it becomes apparent that the person that brought it to you is the one that broke it. There, as you're looking at it, and it's like wires are cut here, and there's hammer marks all over it, and this person's swearing up and down, nah, I don't know, I was using it, it just quit working. And you're sitting there going, well, it doesn't make any sense, because this didn't happen on its own. The problem can't be solved because somebody else broke it, because they're lying to you. Anyway, to get back on point here, yes, there's a point. One of the things I think is important about what we do here is getting together, you know, whether you agree with me or not, it's just almost irrelevant. The point is, you're not alone. In fact, there's a lot of people that agree with you. Maybe not on every single little thing, but get out there. And God, I hope you do get out there. I hope you get out there and talk to normie people. And I hope that you can talk to these normal people and clench your teeth when they call these commies liberals, as though they are liberals when they are not. They're communists. But just grit your teeth. You don't have to sit there and spurg to them about it's the Jews. Just listen to what they say and listen to what they talk about. And you'll find out that, you know, on a lot of stuff, they do agree with you. Not alone. These other people realize the country's gone insane. The whole entire West has gone insane. You're not alone. The rest of the world are the ones that's gone nuts. It's not you. And it's important to realize that, because it could drive you. It could drive you over the edge. It could drive you to be crazy. And you don't want to be crazy. That doesn't accomplish anything. It's self-destructive. But you do. You need to understand that you're not alone. You're not going crazy. This stuff will make you go crazy if you let it. That's why you've got to be grounded. You gotta be grounded in reality. You gotta be grounded. That is why the truth is so fundamental here. If you hold to the truth, you hold to your sanity. Because you are being flooded 24/7 with a constant lying narrative. You know, people, you ever known people that get off on conspiracies? Because everything is a conspiracy. I mean, they lie to us about shit where the truth would work better. And they lie to us just because. I don't know if you've ever known anybody like that in real life, that like when the truth would work better for them, they still lie to you. They just can't help it. They're compulsive liars. People like that drive you crazy. But we live in a world that is a compulsive liar, so as to speak. They lie to us about everything. They lie to us about, and even though you know it's a lie. The official narrative of 9/11 is a lie. The idea that JFK was shot with a surplus rifle with open sights and, you know, from the back, and only his brains blew out the backside of his head. Anybody that knows anything about weaponry knows that that's a lie. They lie and they don't care. But you ever known anybody that gets so far out there in conspiracy land that it's like they're nuts? You know, they're out there. They see a conspiracy in everything. You know, I went out in my yard and these cans were arranged in a different way. They're watching me. The Illuminati are sending their agents to rearrange these empty cans in my yard. And they're sending me a message. See, people, they're way the hell out there. Got to stay grounded in the truth so you don't get. So you don't get way the hell out there. Yes, they lie to you about everything, but you got to stay grounded in truth. That's your anchor. You're grounded in the truth. You're not going to drift off into lunatic land. When you get together on this show and you read these letters, these notes from listeners, you realize these people are saying the same thing you're thinking. When you listen to me, this guy's saying a lot of the same stuff I'm thinking. No, I don't require that you agree with everything I say. You shouldn't. You're going to have your own opinion. That's because you're an independent thinker. Good on you. Sometimes I'm going to say things that make you mad. That's okay. We're just trying to get to the truth. We're trying to get to the truth as best we can with the information we've got. And yes, sometimes I may be wrong about something. I'm just a guy fumbling through this stuff, same as you. But what's important is we're not working through this stuff alone. We're not working through this stuff in a bubble. You're not on an island. You're not alone, and you're not going crazy. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment because I'm looking at the clock, and you know this show is supposed to be an hour long, and we're so used to it running over, but it's really kind of inconsiderate to the network. So I'm really trying to rein that in and get better at you know running within the allotted amount of time. I'm sure we'll still run over. We always do. But anyway, we're going to get into this Christian specific segment. And once again, if you're new around these parts, whether you're a Christian believer or not, I recommend you get in here and sit through a sermon. It's a fun topic. Trust me, you won't fall asleep. It'll be unlike anything you've probably experienced, especially if you've had the misfortune of attending a modern cut church. So get on in here, fill those pews. It's time for the Christian specific segment, the sermon, if you would, here in the Church of the Lampshade. Take your time, get you a cup of coffee, because you can drink coffee here. You can get cozy. That's one of the great things about our sermon here in the Church of the Lampshade. Okay, yeah. So if you're like me, you paused right there and went and got me a fresh cup of coffee. That's right. The Reverend Lampshade drinks coffee while we're sitting here having these important lessons. I think we're having a fun deal today. If you're new around here, you may not know, but if you're a regular member of the congregation, you know that one of the dead horses I beat to death. But I think it's so important is the idea of, you know, action. Everything in the Bible is about action and it's about what you do. Repentance. And I thought we would touch a little bit this week on another example of that, of how people... How you live your life through action, how you repent by the way you do. I think it'll make sense as we go through. We're going to go through a story here. And this isn't one of Jesus's parables. This is something that actually happened. Because a lot of what, you know, examples we use are the examples Jesus gave, which were given in parables. And people get hung up a lot of times because they get confused. You know, like when Jesus tells the story of the Good Samaritan, they act like that's a person that really existed. But it was just a parable. It was just a story, an example, an illustration that Jesus was given. We kind of do that here. I'll get off on a story, and, you know, and say, well, imagine if, you know, it's just a parable. It's a way of teaching. We're going to do John chapter 5, verses 3 through 15. And we're going to pick up at verse 3 here. We got a setting here. There's a pool, and people gather around this pool because they believe that they could be healed. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, blind, halt, withered, waiting for the movement of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first after the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. So you got all these people, you got the scene set here. These people are waiting around and their only hope to get healed of whatever infirmities they may have is to get into the water. They're just waiting. Sit around and wait for the waters to get stirred up. Then they go get down in the water and maybe then they can be healed. But I mean, it's a one-shot deal. They're all waiting for a one-shot deal. It's going to heal. And they're going to get in this pool, one-shot deal. All their problems are solved. But you've got a whole bunch of people waiting to crowd into the pool. And a certain man was there, which had an infirmity, 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he said unto them, "Wilt thou be made whole?" To put it another way, he asked him, "Do you want to get better? You've been this way a long time. Still laying here. Still in the same state. 38 years you've been the same thing. You've been doing the same thing over and over." And Jesus asked him, "Do you want to get better? Wilt thou be made whole?" I think this is interesting. He asks him a question. It's interesting because a lot of times people say they want to be made whole. They want to break a cycle of sin, for instance, in their life. But in reality, they're comfortable with where they're at. Do you want to get better? If you were standing there observing this take place, you would think this was kind of a ludicrous thing. Guy's laying there crippled up on a mat. Yeah, Jesus, I'm pretty sure he wants to get better. I think it's important that Jesus, of course it's important. It's here in the scripture. It's really important how he asks him, "Do you want to get better? Wilt thou be made whole?" Or are you just comfortable with where you're at? The impotent man answered him, "Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me." I'm crippled. I got nobody to help me. I can't get into the water when it gets stirred up. That's why I'm like this. I got nobody to give me help. I've got this excuse why I'm just laying here. You would think that after a while he'd give up because nobody else has showed up to help him into the pool. Why does he think that tomorrow is going to be different? If the pool is apparently he's seen this happen. There's been several times he saw the water get stirred up. And every time the same thing happens, nobody's going to help him. Everybody gets in front of him. Somebody gets into the water first and they get healed. And yet he's still waiting around. Still waiting around, expecting a different result. Well, okay, if you couldn't get into the water because nobody was there to help you, these other people get in before you because you're all crippled up, then why are you still waiting around for this same solution? Still waiting around, still stuck. In the same spot, doing the same thing over and over. Makes a little more sense now, isn't it? When Jesus is like, "Do you even want to be better? Why are you laying here doing the same thing? You know what the end result's going to be." Jesus saith unto him, "Rise, take thy bed, and walk." So Jesus says, "Okay, you know what? Good then, here you go." Boom. You healed. You don't have to wait around in the same spot anymore. Okay, here, I'll step in. I'll break this cycle for you. You could stop right there and be like, "Look, there's another miracle that Jesus did." But there's a lesson in the rest of the story, my Paul Harvey voice. And now the rest of the story. Because why guy wound up turning out to be a real asshole. Told you it wouldn't be a sermon like you used to in cut church. Jesus asked him, "Do you even want to get better?" And the guy had his excuse ready. "Of course I want to get better. I don't have anybody to help me. I want to get into the pool. Nobody will help me into the pool. You know, and so I've been laying here for however many years waiting for a different result, but it's not my fault. I just don't have anybody to help me." And Jesus is like, "Okay, guess what? Here's your excuse blown out of the water. Boom, you're healed. Get up, pick up your bed, and walk." And immediately the man was made whole and took up his bed and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. So the guy, he said he wanted to be healed. He Jesus asked him, "You want to be whole?" He whipped out his excuses why he's not whole. "I don't have anybody to help me." Jesus, "You don't have to have nobody to help me. Here, boom, you healed. Now what are you going to do? Been made whole. Now what are you going to do? Get up, pick up your bed and walk." The Jews, therefore, said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. No doubt, they probably passed by this guy roughly six million times and seen him laying there crippled. And then nobody stops him. Whoa, whoa, whoa. How come you're up walking? You're carrying your bed. It's against the law. How dare you? We caught you. You're carrying your bed around. It's against the law. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Well, this guy healed me. And he told me to pick up my bed and walk, and he just healed me. He just done this miraculous thing. So I did what he said. I just doing what I'm told. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. So Jesus had kept it like, you know, anonymous. He didn't pronounce it. Was it a public miracle? This wasn't anything he was spreading. He was like, if he wanted everybody to know, he would have said so. But he did this on the sly. He did this healing, didn't say, Hey, my name's Jesus. Be sure and tell you, Christ done saved, you know, done made you whole. He done did this miracle. This shows you that there's a larger purpose here. You know, if you were, it's like I've pointed out, you know, if Jesus was trying to find some following here on earth, if he was trying to lead some insurrection at the time, like the Jews claim he was doing, because that's what the Jews say. They don't claim that Jesus didn't exist. They claim that he was just a rabble rouser who was just trying to lead a revolution against the Romans. That's what he was doing. But yet, time and again, we see that he was like doing stuff on the sly and telling people, don't go tell anybody that who it was that healed you. He wasn't going around trying to rally up support. He would get a crowd up and then usually turn around and tell them something that they couldn't accept, a truth that they just couldn't handle, and they would all leave. That's not the way you build up a following. That's not the way you build up a stir up a crowd for your revolution. You tell them what they want to hear. Get them all worked up. You'd be a good speech teller. You'll go around, do things in secret, say, don't tell anybody who healed you. He had a larger purpose. I think this is really illustrated here. But what gets interesting is how the man who was healed, this is what I find fascinating about the story, what the man did. Let's see here. So we're picking up at verse 14. Afterwards, so later on, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said, so Jesus coming along, bumps into the guy again. It's fast, like a time skip here. So later on, Jesus finds this guy, same guy he had healed. Guy had been crippled for what, 38 years? Now he's up. His problem solved. He's healed. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. Sin no more. Unless something worse is going to happen to you. So, I don't know what the guy was doing. I don't know how the guy was living his life. Jesus obviously knew. He wasn't spying on, but he knew. So, when you look at this in the context of the whole thing, Jesus asked him, Do you even want to be made whole? Guy's got an excuse. Blah, 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 blah. This is all the reasons why I'm not healed. Jesus heals him. And the guy immediately does what he's told. He picks up his mat and takes off walking. And when confronted, the guy's like, I don't know. I claims ignorance. I don't know who it was that healed me. But he told me to do this. Not my fault. Again, it's not my fault. It's not my fault I couldn't get in the pool. Not my responsibility. It's not my fault that I'm out here carrying the mat around. I'm just doing what this guy told me to do. Not my fault. Now, Jesus runs into the guy later and rebukes him because of the way he's living. His way of living hasn't gotten any better. In fact, actually, it's gotten worse because now he can commit more sin because now he's out crippled. You know, how much can you sin when you're all crippled up on a mat? You can't even walk around. You're like crawling around on your elbows or some shit. You didn't even have wheelchairs back then. The guy was limited on how much sin he could commit because he was all crippled up. But Jesus runs into him and says, look, yeah, now you're made whole, but look, you're in a worse place. Stop sinning. Something worse is going to happen to you. What could be worse than being crippled? An eternity in hell, maybe? See, the guy hadn't changed where he was. Spiritually, the guy was still crippled up on a mat. Oh, yeah, now he could get up and walk around. But the rest of him was still broken. All he wanted was, all his problems could be fixed if he could just walk. And his problems being fixed, and now I'm free to go do whatever the hell sin I want to do. Kind of rhymes with the heresy that's preached in the modern cut church, isn't it? All you got to do is say the magic words, you accept Jesus, and then you can go and sin all you want to. Isn't that what they're preaching? If you just say you accept Jesus Christ as your Lord and Savior, then you're not going to go to hell no matter what because you've got an out. You've got the magic phrase, Jesus can't send you to hell. You're healed. You can get up. You're not crippled on your mat anymore. You can get up and walk around, and you can go sin all you want to. Jesus said, stop sinning. Something worse is going to happen to you. Whoa, you're not, what? You healed me, now I can walk around. Now I can do all the sins I've been laying there just dreaming about getting to be able to do. I've been laying here for 38 years thinking, man, if I could just go, I don't know what he was thinking. You know, if I could just go punch one of these bitches in the face and rape her in a back alley, then, you know, but I'm crippled, I can't do that. I don't know, I just made that up. The point is, he used the healing. He used Christ's gift as an excuse to sin. Now he used his freedom to sin, and Christ rebuked him of that. How many people, they use the excuse of Christ's forgiveness, this great gift, we're reminded in the scripture that you were bought at a terrible high price, but they use it as an excuse to sin. I'm not talking about you struggle against sin and yes, you're forgiven when you screw up. I'm talking about, oh, good, now I can just do whatever the hell I want to. Don't have to worry about that hell thing because I know the magic phrase. I said the magic phrase. I've cast a spell over myself. I'm guaranteed a slot in heaven no matter what kind of wickedness I partake in. Wilt thou be made whole? Well, the guy just wanted to walk. He didn't want to be made whole. The answer was no, because to be made whole, it wasn't just his physical infirmity that was holding him back. He was more crippled spiritually than he was physically. The guy could see was his physical, he was at in the physical realm. All he could see is, I'm crippled, I can't walk. And you can understand it to an extent. I mean, yeah, that would be a big thing. Crippled, I can't walk. Nobody's invented wheelchairs yet. I'm just crawling around on a mat. Pissing on myself. Nobody to help me go to the bathroom. Who's going to help me? Nobody's going to hold this for me. You can't see past that. You can't see the fact that he's crippled not just physically, but he's crippled spiritually. And Jesus, by healing him, made it evident. Sure, here, get up. You think that's your problem? You think that's the extent of your problem? Here, you're healed. Pick up your mat. Now walk. Woo, you walk. Now what are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with it afterwards? I'm going to go indulge in every kind of sin in the world and forget about the fact that I spent 38 years with bed sores on me because I couldn't move around. I'm going to forget all about that. Blow that off and just go, just jump into the iniquity of the world. Jesus shows up again and checks on him. Verse 10, no more. Something worse is going to happen to you. And here's the fun final point. So after Jesus points out to the guy, you're going to hell. You know, that whole 38 years being crippled on a mat ain't nothing compared to going to hell. So what does the man do after Jesus rebukes him? Instead of being like on his knees, being like, forgive me, I know I'm not doing right. Forgive me, Lord. I've got to, I got to get this right. You're right. I've wasted this gift you've given to me. Forgive me. No, the man departed and told the Jews it was Jesus that had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day, which was just their excuse. So Jesus rebukes him. What does the guy do? It's that Jesus guy. He runs and tells the Jews, who were the ones that confronted him, like, how dare you carry your mat on the Sabbath day? You're going to be in trouble. Wasn't my fault. It was the guy that healed me. I don't know who he was, but he told me. And Jesus shows up and is like, man, he rebukes him because of the way he's living. Taking this gift. I healed you. You said that was all you needed. All that was wrong was your physical. And I fixed your physical. Now what's wrong with you? You're running around sinning. Telling you better quit. Going to wind up in a worse place. Something worse is going to happen to you. And the guy, instead of accepting what's still not his fault, he goes, he's pissed now. How dare he tell me that I can't do whatever I want to? And he runs straight to the Jews and tells them it was Jesus. And everybody knew at the time the Jews were seeking to kill Jesus. So that's the way he repaid being healed after 38 years of laying on a mat. It's easy to read this story and just shake your head at this guy. But the truth of the matter is that a whole lot of people have the exact same mindset. Jesus, if you'll just fix my money problems, then everything will be good. Jesus, if you'll just fix this. Jesus, if you'll just fix that. Do you want to be made whole? Yeah, yeah, I want to have my, I want to have that new house. I want to have whatever it is that I think is the problem fixed. But that's not the problem. I mean, it may be a part of the problem. But like this guy here, really the only thing it was impeding him from was going and committing the sins that he wanted to do. I think of how many people run around that if you asked them in this country today, are you a Christian? Oh, yeah, I'm a Christian. I attend the fill-in-the-blank church. Go at least twice a year. They give me a good sermon about what a good person I am. Now, Jesus loves me no matter what I do. And believe me, I do a lot. Busy out here doing whatever the hell I want to. Living it up. Short time I got because I'm going to heaven regardless. They're just like that guy. And the first time someone shows up and says, better quit sinning. Something worse is going to happen to you. What do they do? Run to the Jews and say, this guy made me feel bad. This guy told me something I didn't want to hear. You do something about him. He ran to the Jews. He didn't run to the Jews because, you know, he thought that was the right thing to do. He ran to the Jews to get back at Jesus. How dare he rebuke me? How dare he tell me I'm wrong? How dare he threaten me and say that if I keep sinning, something worse is going to happen? I'll show him. I know who's looking for him. I'm going to show these guys. Heck, they may even reward me a little bit. I go and tell them, hey, you know you were asking me a couple weeks ago about who it was. Remember, I was the guy with the mat and you confronted me and threatened me because I was daring to carry my mat on the Sabbath. I know who it was. I'm going to tell you, sometimes, you know, in the end, I guess the guy did wind up in a worse place, didn't he? He really did. He would have been better off if he would have been stayed crippled on the mat, because at least then he wouldn't have been able to sin in the ways he was obviously wanting to do. But when Jesus asked him, wilt thou be made whole? The guy didn't realize what that meant. All the guy could see is what he wanted. Wanted this crippled thing healed. And so often, it's a scary thing when the Lord gives you what you think you want. I've said judgment on this land is a lot of times judgment against a nation, against a people, whatever, however you want to look at it. It's just simply carried out in the form of the Lord gives you what you demand that you want. The nation demands they want these things, even though they're in rebellion against the natural order, which God has established. even though they're in rebellion against what God has told us, they demand this is what we want. A lot of times God's judgment simply said, okay, you want it, you're going to get it good and hard. And things keep getting worse and keep getting worse. But that's, yeah, the guy wound up in a worse spot. Because he didn't realize that being made whole meant more than just his physical infirmity. He was crippled spiritually as well, but he didn't care about that. He paid that no mind. He was focused only on what he could get, what he could do, what kind of pleasures he could reason, whatever sins he wanted to commit. Now he was free to do them. Now he could walk around. He wasn't crippled on the mat no more. I don't know how many times I've had people tell me, you know, so often non-believers, and I'm reminded of it sitting here, you know, reflecting on this story, this interaction that Jesus had with this guy. And I've had interactions and people are angry and they're bitter in life. You know, if I just had this, I don't know, if I just had a woman, if I just had a good paying job, if I just had this, if I just had that, and there are always just things in this life, then everything would be, I will be made whole. But they wouldn't be made whole because they're crippled spiritually. If you gave them those things, you hear about people that win the lottery, because when you're working poor person, you always have that. Everybody does. You know, if I win the lottery, you know, I'm done breaking my back doing this stuff. We've all done it. Raise my hand. Me too. But then you read these stories and you hear these stories about people that win the lottery and they like wreck their lives with the money. You know, they do. They wreck their lives with the money. They go out and they blow it because they have no sense. They're poor because, you know, not just because of circumstances, but just because of the decisions they make. And you give them a lot of money, but they still make the same decisions, you know, and they wind up being broke again, only in a worse position, because now they're broke with a whole ton of debt because they're like, well, I got all this money, but I don't want to spend it right now. So I'm going to borrow the money to get this giant mansion that never property taxes. What's that? Yeah. You know, so they wind up broke. They lose everything where before they at least had a shack of a house to live in. But now they don't have nothing because they got rid of the shack of the house and bought a mansion that they couldn't actually afford. And now that's been foreclosed on. And now they're out on the street. But there in their mind, it was just that one physical thing. That was all that was holding them back. But it was more. There was more holding them back. If I just had this, if I just had that, if I just had the perfect woman, if I just had the perfect job, if I just had this, that everything would be okay. But you have to realize that so often a part of what's crippling you, and maybe even one of the reasons why you're facing those problems in the first place, isn't because you're crippled physically. It's because you're crippled spiritually. But until you recognize that, you're going to find yourself there day after day, holding on to excuses. Nobody helped me in the pool. God won't do anything. I don't know. You hold on, you see, waiting for something to happen. Nothing changes. It's everybody. I'm not going to do anything different. I'm just going to lay here and wait for something to happen on its own. Being crippled. You got to recognize that being made whole isn't just those physical things. In fact, if you'll focus on being whole spiritually, you might find that you're not nearly as crippled physically as you think you are, whatever that issue may be. Anyway, something to reflect on. Hope you got something out of it. I've always found that story to be interesting. I really do. I find that story to be interesting from the point where Jesus asks him if he even wants to get better, all the way up to, and especially the way the guy reacted later, the time skip after the story, where Jesus runs into him again and how the guy takes great offense at being rebuked How dare you? Who do you think you are? Well, I'm the guy that made you whole, that did a miracle on you. Doesn't matter. Insulted me. How dare you? He runs to the Jews. Try to get Jesus in trouble. I'll show him. It's just amazing. Times change. All these years go by and human nature remains the same. The way people are remains so much the same. Anyway, we got to wrap it up on that note. And we're a little long, but imagine that. We'll wrap up on that note. One final thank you to those financially supporting the show. And again, if you're your first time stopping by listening, hope you got something special. Hope you'll be back, and the rest of the congregation. We'll see you back here next week for the Church of the Lampshade.